Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
So thanks for joining this talk about measuring uncertainty with hypothetical distance in written language. Let me quickly introduce myself. So my name is Simone Grieser. I'm at the School of Applied Psychology, FHNW. My areas of interest and expertise are in 4 areas. So digital communication, whatever is happening digitally, not just social media, but emails, blogs, chats, you name it. And I'm really interested in leveraging existing data, all the data that we have online, organizational insight, and that's really been at the core of my PhD. So I've made my life quite hard, because when I started my PhD, my supervisor wanted me to do interviews, and I thought, well, I've done a lot of interviews in my master thesis and in the applied research projects that I've done. Let me do something new and different. Let me actually use the data that is available. And that has sort of been my credo, my motto for the past 6 years. I've done my PhD at Warwick Business School in the marketing department. So for marketing, brands are very important. So I've looked at the psychological distance of brands. But of course, that can be extended to many areas of our lives, as I'll explain later. I'm also interested in customer experience in co-creation. I'm sure you've come across the sharing economy term, so where everything shifts from sort of ownership to its access. So we don't own things anymore, we rent them. So renting is a service experience. So really, we are co-creating services. So that's roughly me. So let's, without further ado, talk about hypothetical distance. What is it? In a nutshell, it's the likelihood of an occurrence. What I'm going to talk to you today is a psychological and linguistic perspective. So I'm not sort of going to explain a mathematical, statistical approach about risk modeling. I mean, uncertainty can be looked at from that perspective, but that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about psychology and language. So as I've said, it pertains to the likelihood of an occurrence. So a couple of months ago, if you would have seen the first picture with this half-empty shelf, you would have been very surprised, and you would have thought, no, that's not happening. That's very unlikely. So unlikely and uncertain events, hypothetical distance is set to be high. So it would be hypothetically distant. So a couple of months ago, these half-empty shelves would have been very unlikely, so hypothetically very distant. But now this has become a likely and certain event that we don't, you know, always find what we need or what we wanted. So the half-empty shelves have become hypothetically quite close. On the other hand, a few months ago, going to the beach with 7 other friends would have been, you know, a plan, something that we can do and that is likely. But now, I don't know where you are, but where I am, it's virtually impossible, because I'm in a landlocked country. So me going to the beach with the borders being shut is very unlikely. So hypothetical distance is not just applicable to a pandemic, but just to life in general. And of course, the nice thing is, maybe you're living next in a country that has sea, even in the States, that where you can travel, where, you know, maybe you're living close to the seaside. So for you, going to the sea might be something that you can do. Maybe not with 7 other people, but maybe with 2 or 3 more people. So depending on where we are and what our current situation is, things are likely or unlikely. And that's the nice thing about this hypothetical distance, that it's a customer-centric measurement. It really puts the individual at the center, because the reference point is a customer's current situation and the previous experiences associated with it. So as I've said, for me, going to the beach is not as likely as probably somebody living in southern Italy would have got, you know, beaches, or somebody living in Britain would have got sea all around the country. As I've said, I'm going to approach this from a psychological and linguistic perspective. So I've looked up what does Cambridge Dictionary say about uncertainty. And they say uncertainty is a situation in which something is not known, or something that is not known or certain. So it has that element of ambiguity, the element of not knowing. Of course, being a researcher, I've had to, you know, validate that with Collins Dictionary. So Collins Dictionary sort of is a bit more specific about it, in the sense that they say uncertainty is a state of doubt about the future or what is the right thing to do. So it also has this moral aspect to it. But I really want to draw your attention to the synonyms. So Collins says that a synonym of uncertainty is this unpredictability, this ambiguity, this element of not knowing, of having this vagueness. And that ties in really nicely into hypothetical distance. I'll explain later on why that is, so bear with me. So hypothetical distance, it's not something that I've just come up for this talk. It has empirical studies. Here are 3 of them. There are not that many, because previously the interest in it was not as high amongst researchers. There were other areas that were more researched, maybe because it's also, yeah, it's not that easy to grasp. But Waxlack and colleagues, they've looked at hypothetical distance from an information structuring viewpoint. So how many categories would people create? And what they found is that when people were asked to sort a task, you know, sort items into different categories for unlikely and likely events, they found that people created fewer categories when they thought the event was unlikely than when they thought it was likely. But for unlikely and hypothetically distant events, they included more atypical items, because they created fewer categories, right? And also they picked more general descriptions. Interestingly, when they asked people to complete a picture completion task, the participants who thought they were, who were primed, so these were all experiments, people who were primed to think this is a likely event, they were far quicker to complete a picture completion task than those who were in this unlikely mindset. Maybe more interesting for consumer behavior is Todorov and colleagues' study. They looked at preferences. And what they found is that when they gave people the choice between a likely and an unlikely event, people had a preference for a desirable and attractive event in comparison to a doable and a feasible event. But when people were told this is a likely event that is going to happen, then the preference changed. So people preferred an event that was not as attractive and desirable, but rather something that was more doable and feasible. They also empirically proved that a likely event is perceived to be more real in comparison to an unlikely one. So that maybe, you know, intuitively makes sense, but they've proven it from a research point of view. And following on that notion, then Kanten studied how long people's estimates are of a task, how long it would take them to complete the task. And he then showed and proved that people overestimate the task duration of an event or a task that they think is unlikely and unrealistic. So that is sort of from the academic side, from the research side. But hypothetical distance is not a standalone concept. It is part of the psychological distance family. I call them psychological distance family. Trope and Lieberman have summarized them together in their article in 2010. And there is a lot of research about psychological distance. So there's four dimensions, as you can see. And please, you know, let me know if you can't see them. I can make it slightly bigger. So there's four dimensions. So there's the temporal one, there's the hypothetical one that I've already sort of like explained, the spatial one and the social one. And these ones, they all interlink, they all kind of like marry up into this one family of psychological distance. And what it says, psychological distance, is whatever is close to me is sort of like little abstracted. So whatever I experience today, right here, right now in my home office, I can describe with great detail, with very specific ways. And I'll, you know, it'll have a heterogeneous mental representations about it. So if you ask me about my breakfast this morning, I'll, you know, be able to recall a lot of different things that are not necessarily, you know, grouped together ordinarily are mentioned together. But if you sort of like ask me about my breakfast half a year ago, I'll abstract that memory a lot. So I'll remember that I've had breakfast, but I wouldn't be able to describe a lot of detail. So psychologically distant memories or mental representations, they are essential, they are prototypical. So in that sense, they're homogeneous. And going sort of like back again to the beach example that I've mentioned in the beginning, and we are now sort of like, the now is that we are homebound, wherever that is, versus, you know, we were able to go on holiday and we will be able to go on holiday again. So on the temporal dimension, right, you know, you've got the past and the future, and the middle right now is that, you know, we are homebound and we aren't able to travel geographically. You know, there is the here, me, landlocked country, versus the there, the beach. You know, how likely is it? And also the social dimension that talks about close versus weak relationship. Most importantly, again, these four dimensions, they all influence each other, and they're all part of one bigger construct. So how would we measure then hypothetical distance, or hypothetical psychological distance in written language? Well, there is other ways that you can measure it. Of course, you can measure it on a scale, or you can measure it with the number of categories, as Vaxlak and colleagues have done. But what you can do is measure it with language. And interestingly, most of the psychological distance studies have measured psychological distance with language, but they've manually coded it. So I'm suggesting a slightly different approach here. So let's do together a little experiment, a fun experiment. So please, in your inner eye, imagine the word apple. Just picture, what does an apple look like in your inner eye when you have to picture it? When you picture sleeveless, the word, what comes to your mind? Or to comb. So when you picture that, you probably have images similar to that. You know, maybe the apple is green, maybe it's slightly more yellowish, or maybe you thought about the apple brand. But sleeveless is something without, you know, sleeves. So, you know, not having a sleeve. To comb is, you know, it would probably involve a comb, or maybe, yeah, the hand might be also be able to use to, but, you know, you see what I'm getting at here. So we use concrete language for anything that is psychologically close, that is very easy to access. So we use this type of language for things that are likely, such as having, you know, breakfast this morning, that are feasible, that are accessible. Yes, I can still access my kitchen, that are affordable. So this is when we use concrete language for these type of situations or occurrences. Abstract language, on the other hand, is different. So again, let's do this little fun game again. Imagine in your inner eye spirituality. What does the word conceptual look like in your inner eye? And again, picture the verb would. What image do you attach to the word would? These images are sort of a suggestion, but not, you know, probably you didn't have these images in mind. Spirituality can be anything. Conceptual, yeah, you know, maybe you had something, you know, with categories in it, maybe not. But the point is that abstract language is quite vague. It is ambiguous. It's not everything is entirely known, is entirely clear and concise. So abstract language is used for things that are psychologically distant to the consumer. And there are abstract language is used for unlikely events that are attractive and desirable, but inaccessible and exclusive. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty. So having language, how would you then, you know, come from the language to a psychological distance rating? I'll briefly walk through that. For those of you familiar with natural language processing, you're probably familiar with it. So this is an example from my research, where I've collected tweets from consumers to H&M. And the tweet reads, from my fun time in London with photographer Adeni Mecha Photo, skirts and sweater from H&M. Then I'll process this text. I'll remove the links and the at and emoticons. In the second step, I'll make everything lowercase. And in the third step, I'll remove the stop words, so only content words are analyzed. And then in the fourth and final step, I'll replace the content word with psychological distance or language concreteness ratings. So the nice thing is that this method works on any type of language. Only content words analyzed, so words that have a meaning by themselves. Because if the word in doesn't have a meaning by themselves, it only has a meaning when it says in the house. So that's roughly what content words are. The psychological distance ratings are from a dictionary, and this dictionary contains 40,000 words. Each of these words has been rated by at least 18 different individuals. So it's not just one or two people who think this is psychologically distant or psychologically close, but rather 18 different people. And then, of course, you can do a statistical analysis once you've got the numeric values for the text. So the word fun, for example, would be or is psychologically distant and abstract, because it has a rating of 1.97, but the word photographer, people can more easily imagine what is a photographer, what does he do, as it has a rating of 4.76. And that is quite concrete, as the rating scale goes from 1 abstract to 5 concrete. So what, I mean, language has been analyzed before. So what, you know, can you do with language in general? So language analysis today is analyzed for sentiment. You may have, you know, experience with that, or for content. So with sentiment, the language is analyzed surrounding products or services or marketing activities. Is the marketing campaign received well, or is it a PR campaign? Is that well received or not? Is the sentiment positive or negative? Or customer emails or chats is scanned for certain keywords. When it says a bill question, then the email is rerouted to the accounts department. When somebody says change mobile phone contract, then the customer email or chat or what or tweet is rerouted to the sales team. So it's really about automating workflow. But as I've said before, language can also be psychologically closer distant, so you can do more with language. You can measure uncertainty, for starters. You can also position your product, your service, your brand, because when a brand is positioned as psychologically close and sort of concrete, then consumers think, oh, this is an affordable brand, I can easily buy this, but price is perceived as a sacrifice. On the other hand, when a brand is positioned as psychologically distant, it is it's hypothetically more distant, but it's also more attractive, more exclusive, and price is perceived as a quality indicator. The third thing that you can do with psychological distance in language is match the marketing and sales communication or employee communication to the perception of the customer or the employee. Why would you want to match? Because a matching communication is evaluated more favorably, and also what is communicated, therefore. So a little bit about my own research. I've looked at brand positioning with psychological distance. I've looked at two different types of brands, a luxury and non-luxury. So the logic is that luxury brands would position themselves as psychologically distant because they want to be exclusive and desirable, and they're not comparable. They really don't want to be everywhere. They want to be exclusive. Non-luxury brands, on the other hand, they want to be in consumers' minds. They want to be accessible, feasible. They want to be perceived as affordable, and sort of they provide value for money, for price. So they want to position themselves as psychologically close. And the assumption that I'm making here is that the brand positioning impacts how customers think about these brands. So the whole marketing activities impact the customers in the intended way. So consumers will think that luxury brands are psychologically distant and non-luxury brands are psychologically close. What I've then done, or how I've tested these assumptions, is that I've measured brand and consumer language with the approach that I've explained before. And I've looked at 15 luxury and 15 non-luxury brands. So I've collected the brand language in tweets from 15 luxury and non-luxury brands. And I've also looked at how do consumers respond to these brands on Twitter. So I've got 3,000 brand language tweets and 3,000 consumer language tweets. What I found was, in a way, puzzling, but in a way, confirmatory. So I didn't find the difference in brand language that I thought I would find. But I found that consumers use psychologically close words and concrete language for non-luxury brands, and they use psychologically more distant words and abstract language for luxury brands. So I've sort of then further investigated, well, if there is no systematic difference in brand language, how do brands actually communicate these 30 brands that I've investigated? And what I found is that Chanel, so going the first figure on the left with the luxury brands, is that there is a big difference. You know, some of them, they psychologically distance themselves from consumers, whereas there's other brands, they use even more concrete language than consumers use for them. So Chanel is really psychologically approaching consumers. They use more specific and detailed words in their Twitter brand language than consumers use when they tweet them. The same is true for Givenchy, Hermes, Lamborghini, and Moët. Louis Vuitton and Bugatti, they almost match their brand language to the consumer language. But Maserati and Yves Saint Laurent, they psychologically distance themselves. You could say, well, as a luxury brand, it's good to be perceived even more exclusive and even more psychologically distant than the consumers. So in that sense, it might not be this harmful. Non-luxury brands, so that's the figure on the right-hand side, is interesting because a lot of 13 out of the 50 non-luxury brands psychologically distance themselves from consumers. So they move further away from consumers. That is really not in line with how they would want to position themselves, because they want to be accessible and affordable and not distant to consumers. And again, there is one brand that matches its communication to the consumer language, and that's Topshop. So that's a little bit from my own research. To wrap things up, hypothetical psychological distance and consumer uncertainty. Psychological hypothetical distance measures uncertainty consumers perceive in reference to an event. So that can be COVID-19, but it can also be another crisis. It can be anything. It can be a brand. It can be a product or a service. Psychologically close language indicates a low hypothetical distance that an event is likely, or that the consumer thinks this is going to happen. Psychologically distant language indicates high hypothetical distance that consumers or whoever writes the text think this is unlikely to happen or to take place. So there's two thoughts that I want to leave you with. One is the role of psychological distance in the COVID-19 crisis. We're working on it, me at the School of Applied Psychology at the Institute where I'm based there. So based from the previous studies, but of course these studies, they were done A, with experiments, and B, in times where the world was not wrapped in a pandemic. But following these results, we would say that, well, psychologically close and concrete language is used when somebody is really impacted by COVID-19. It's in happening in this person's life right here, right now, and, you know, to people that the writer, the consumer, emotionally cares about. But if somebody's using psychologically distant and abstract language, the person is not impacted as badly or severely. One could always say that, you know, it happens in another time, in another place, to another people, to other people that the writer has no connection with. And lastly, I've mentioned this ambiguity that is associated with uncertainty and also with psychological distance, right? Psychologically distant language that is abstract, that is vague. You've got that ambiguity associated with it. And what is the role of trust? And that is how I want to close, and I'm around for questions. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm just wondering, is there a breakout session for Q&A? I mean, or do we just meet somewhere at the networking table? Or can I unmute people? Sorry, I'm not familiar with Hopin. I know how to do this in WebEx and in Zoom. Oh, I'm sorry to hear, Donna. Right. I think I'm going to end this session, but I hope I can find you some networking place so we can continue the conversation, Sam. Because I said close. Well, if I use psychologically closed language or concrete language, it means that Corona really impacts my life in the sense that it has happened to me right now, or I just feel that it is closed on a temporal, spatial, and social level. So let's untangle this, I think, maybe at another point. Right. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thanks for listening to ClickSuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at ClickSuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @ClickSuasion.